The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, Q&A edition, as we take a swing at answering your questions that you've sent in by email for the most part. The best way to send us questions, if you're curious, go to the website jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, there's a contact form. You can learn a little more about us. You can go to our podcast-specific website from that main homepage. Also, our Social Security blog, which is fairly popular, also you can get to at the bottom of that homepage. There's links to both the Retirement and IRA Show itself, as well as that Social Security blog. And most of the questions on the show come via that route. And we have a fairly large pile. I know I've noticed lately, Jim, that several people have tried the Go Patriots get me to the top of the list technique. I'm assuming you're going to reward them with...
I do have a couple of the Go Pats pulled out.
Doing exactly that.
Patriots are going to need more than just a few good Go Pats well wishes. Put it that way. Pats are not looking good this year. We're the worst 10-2 team.
I was going to say, you're complaining a lot for 10-2.
We are horrendous. You never would imagine hearing this about the New England Patriots, at least the New England Patriots over the last 20 years. We have no offense.
It's a little odd, isn't it?
Yeah, we have no freaking offense. I mean, even Brady is getting frustrated. And no offense. Absolutely no offense. And we looked like haphazard fools against the Ravens. And, of course, the Texans did us in the other day. And we have no easy feat. We have KC coming into town this coming week. So, Go Pats help. You do rise to the top a little bit. It's kind of like a cream, but stuck under a few layers of cake.
Sprinkles.
Sprinkles or whatever. It's not, I don't know where I'm going with that analogy. But I do have a couple of Go Pat emails that we're going to get to.
Okay.
I've pulled six.
Wow.
I know.
You're optimistic.
Any one of these, I could go on and on and on, but I'm trying not to be a squirrel, as someone has recently accused me of being.
No, I think it's a squirrel distracting you. You're like a golden retriever when he sees a squirrel.
Oh, yes. I was like the dog who saw a squirrel. Yeah. I'm not a squirrel.
Yes.
I felt like a squirrel today. You know, I was up on the roof today, as you know.
Like a squirrel.
I was watching the squirrels. I got a lot of squirrels. I didn't realize how many squirrels I have.
And they were all wondering
what the hell are you doing up on the roof. For those who don't know, folks, I almost died today, and I have no sympathy from anyone here. They didn't even know I was missing. But
you weren't late yet by the time you called.
What had happened is we got a hell of a lot of snow for Front Range of Colorado, a hell of a lot of snow last week.
Mm-hmm.
about 18 inches at my house. Mm-hmm. And normally in Colorado, it snows and it melts, what, within a day or two?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the way it is.
This time it's been a little cold, so it's sticking around.
So it's been sticking around, and it gets just warm enough where everything is melting. And my house, they don't build houses like this anymore, has that 2-foot overhang.
Mm-hmm.
So all the snow is melting from the heat of the roof,
mm-hmm.
and it melts, and then it hits that overhang
mm-hmm.
and refreezes.
Yeah.
And I get ice dams.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally forgot, because we had no snow last year. I didn't pull out my snowblower once last year. So anyways, long story short, folks, I get this big-ass ice dam forming right over my back door, and I can see the water. It's not good. So I told staff yesterday in the morning, I'm going to go up on the roof and shovel all the snow off so it doesn't
exactly keep... what they tell you not to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a brilliant idea.
Mm.
So in the morning, I set the ladder up, and it was a little icy on the driveway, so I jammed the ladder into the Subaru. Wasn't going to jam it into the Lexus.
Yeah.
So I jammed it into the grill of the Subaru. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to lock in pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And up to the roof I went. And when I got up there, I realized there's a hell of a lot more snow and ice up here than I thought. But for some odd reason, I decided to keep trooping on. And I had just rubber boots on. I didn't even have good hiking boots. And no, they were just rubber sole boots you would wear, in they call them muck rucks. They're just mm-hmm. a rubber boot. Mm-hmm. So up the roof I start going. It didn't take me long, Chris, to realize this wasn't a wise choice. And every step forward, I was sliding back a couple. And I'm getting mm-hmm. closer and closer to the ladder again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting no traction. And I tried turning to retreat and go back down, and I couldn't. I mean, the roof was so slippery, I thought, I am going to slide off. I got nowhere to go but up. So I kept going up, and I finally got to the top of the roof and realized I'm in quite the predicament. I had no cell phone on me.
Mistake one.
Mistake. No cell
phone.
Well,
at this point, it's about mistake three.
Yeah. I should never have attempted to climb up in ice. And even if I got to the top, my intention was to walk down the roof while pushing the snow shovel, only to realize when I get to the top, they sell rakes for this. Big, long, 20-foot handle rakes for this purpose. So you are not on said roof pushing a snow shovel. How stupid. Oh, I was just livid at myself. And I couldn't get down. I was stuck up there. And I don't live in a neighborhood, folks. I live off a county road on 10 acres of land. So I was hoping neighbor to the left, who raises goats, would be out eventually taking care of his goats, because he usually does. Neighbor to the right, who's in her 70s, an elderly woman in her 70s, was not there because her car wasn't there. But I was hoping she could at least come and call for help. I didn't expect her to help me get down. Nobody came. For an hour and a half, I stayed up there all by my lonesome, watching the squirrels. Watching the squirrels. Until FedEx came. Cool. FedEx came to deliver a package, and the guy had no clue I was up on the roof. So when he got out of the FedEx truck, I yelled down to him, "Hello!" And he looks up at me. And I said to him, "I'm in a bit of a pickle. I need your help getting me down." And he looked up at me and he goes, "How?" I says, "Well, see that ladder right there jammed into the grill of the Subaru? I need you to carry it into the backyard." And he had to go through a couple of snow mounds. I'm surprised he did it. Go into the backyard because there's an area in my backyard that is southern exposure. And the snow had melted on that part of the roof. And there was enough open grass, too, that had already started to melt. So he brought it out to there, and he jammed it in there, and he put his foot on. He's like, "Okay, you can make it down." And I made it. But I could have died up there.
You could have.
I get no sympathy. No sympathy for you.
Not even from the squirrels.
No. You know, and I realize now on so many levels that was just a stupid-ass thing for me to do this morning. But I also thought staff would realize I wasn't here, and at least...
Eventually, we would have looked. Eventually. We're busy doing our thing here.
Hey, Jim's not here. I told Laura I was going up on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently she forgot. All right. So anyways, that was what happened to me. Not that it matters. I am going to kill two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm. Proper use of that phrase.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm getting better at it. If I can find... Okay. So we received two emails. Actually, we received three emails recently in response to our 60-day rollover conversion strategy, which doesn't surprise me. We usually get a lot. Mm-hmm. If anyone doesn't know, that's the strategy for doing Roth conversions via 60-day rollover to give you a little bit more time to figure out your taxes. You can go on to iTunes or onto the website of the podcast and find that one. I don't know the number. Do you know the number, show?
No, but I'll look it up while you're okay. reading these.
So that garnered two very, very similar email questions. They came in a month apart. One came in at the end of October. The other one came in at the end of November. But the one in October wrote this, Chris. He said, you recently spoke about doing a follow-up on your 60-day rollover EDU show. This is sort of related to that, and I thought it could be useful to someone doing a Roth conversion in later years, so I thought I would send it to you. And then he signed his real name, but we're obviously going to protect his anonymity. And we're going to call him George. But this particular George sent me a link, folks, to a story, Chris, on something that we have talked about on this show, since day one. Literally, we've been doing a radio show / podcast for over a decade. And it is the fact that when money is taken from an IRA and sent to the IRS as a tax withholding, the IRS will consider that money to have been received equally throughout the year. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those odd quirks in the tax code. Mm-hmm. And it is a strategy the Ed Slott Group had taught to me well over a decade ago when mm-hmm. I first joined. It's one of the first things, you know, hey, here's a neat little thing you might want to know. Ed uses this a lot with his tax clients. The fact that some people miss quarterly payments, or if you're doing things right around this time of year, you should be looking at how much income did you make this year? How much in taxes did you have withheld? What do you think you're going to make in December? Are you withholding enough in taxes? Now, if you are an employee and you're having money taken directly out of your pay, you don't pretty much have to worry about it. But when you're a retiree and you are responsible for paying the taxes and you set up a quarterly tax payment structure, or your CPA or tax advisor or enrolled agent has set it up for you, sometimes, Chris, good plans don't work out as expected. And by the end of the year, you realize, I didn't withhold enough in taxes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now you're going to be faced with an 8%, I believe it's 8, it's either 6 or 8% penalty for not paying your quarterly taxes. So you're going to get a penalty for not doing it right. Well, this listener wanted to send me a link to an article that talked about the fact if this is you and you owe taxes or you think you're going to be nailed with the penalty, because sometimes, Chris, people don't withhold any taxes. They just take their distributions mm-hmm. and withhold no taxes. And then they find out, hey, wait a minute, I was supposed to withhold taxes all year long? And now they're going to be hit with a big penalty. Mm-hmm. Well, a trick is to figure out how much in taxes you should have paid quarterly throughout the year and send it all to the IRS before the end of December via a withdrawal from an IRA. So let's just say you never paid any taxes all year. For some reason, you never paid, or you did pay, but you didn't pay enough. And now you're doing a preliminary tax analysis, and you or your enrolled agent or your CPA is starting to realize, hey, you underpaid by $15,000. I'm just making this number up. You're going to be nailed with an 8% penalty on top of the $15,000 in taxes. Well, that could be another $1,200, $1,300 penalty on top. So you want to avoid that. You could do what, Chris? You could take $15,000.
Mm-hmm. You could call up and ask for the distribution, but have them, withhold and send in as a tax payment the entire amount. Because you can tell them what percentage of this would you like us to send in as withholding to the IRS. And have you run into any custodians that said, no, we can't do 100%?
Nope.
That doesn't make any sense, no, right? They're fine.
They'll withhold and send to the IRS as much as you want. Yep. So you, exactly, Chris is correct. You just tell the custodian, let's just say again, you have $15,000 underpayment. You got till the end of December to do this, but don't dilly-dally. It's already December 2nd or 3rd today. So you would call up your custodian and say, yeah, I'd like to take a $15,000 withdrawal from my IRA and send it all to the IRS as withholdings. Now the IRS will consider that $15,000 received equally throughout the year. Right. Now you may not have this issue. Maybe you didn't owe anything in quarter one, two, and three, and you got a massive payment in quarter four. Some delayed compensation payment came in or something. No big deal. You're going to do a massive income tax payment in quarter four because that's when the payment came in. But if you had received money throughout the year, they want their taxes throughout the year. That's the issue. So if you had been having $5,000 a month sent to you every month and you never had any taxes withheld from it, that's where you're going to get burned. You can't send $15,000 to the IRS from your bank account as a quarterly payment in the fourth quarter because the IRS will only apply that to taxable income received in the fourth quarter. And if you did receive, so this might have been a bad example, if you did receive a massive payment in the fourth quarter, that's how you could do it. You don't have to do the IRA strategy. But if you have been paying yourself a little bit every month and it's in the fourth quarter, you realize, holy majoli, I didn't pay enough in taxes. I was supposed to have paid the equivalent of $15,000 throughout the year and I didn't do it. I was supposed to have paid every quarter and I didn't do it. Well, that's where you just take $15,000, not from the bank. Because if you took it from the bank and sent it to the IRS with a quarterly payment, they'll apply it to just that quarter.
It's got to show up as withholding.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're going to take it from the IRA as a withholding. You can take $15,000 out, withhold 100% of it, send it to the IRS, and they will consider it to have been received equally every quarter. It's a really bizarre. But anyway, somebody wanted to share that. And then we got another email.
Are we considering this a second question?
It's a second question.
Okay.
Very, very similar. It begins, hello, Jim, Chris, Piss, Joe, Birdman, and the other guy.
Pretty much
I
covered everybody.
I think he's everybody. Got everybody.
Yeah.
He's a long-time listener there. Yeah. He's got everybody. My name is Tom Brady.
What? This person, he's taking a little too far now.
And I'm a quarterback for the New England Patriots. While I expected to win more Super Bowls before my career is over, at some point I know I will have to retire. Currently, I am thinking when my career is over, I will move to Kentucky. Because my wife, Giselle, said the state is filled with attractive George Clooney doppelgangers? Yeah. What's a doppelganger?
That's somebody who looks exactly like you. Another person, it's considered, you know, kind of your mirror image.
So I'm a George Clooney doppelganger?
I wouldn't go that far, but he's implying that such a thing. He's really laying it on thick.
He's a very smart man.
We'll see when he gets to his actual question.
Okay.
He's saying all the right stuff to get to the top of the list.
Hopefully you and I will be neighbors because I've always wanted to learn how to garden.
Wow.
Hey, I'm just saying.
This is good. This is a good one so far.
It's a pretty good one. I like it. Yeah. Okay. Okay, and then he gets into it. I am seeking some clarity on how to make quarterly estimated payments and avoid being penalized when I retire. Here is my question. It is my understanding the IRS treats federal and state withholding from an IRA distribution as if taxes were paid equally throughout the year. Let me stop there. IRS has no bearing on the state. IRS is federal. Now, how each individual state is going to treat an underpayment and if it will be equal throughout the year, like I just described in the previous, really wasn't a question, it was more of a statement. You're going to have to check with each state and see how they're going to treat that.
Right.
But the IRS has no bearing on the state. But anyway, still a brilliant man, just the same. Okay. Where did I leave off? It is my understanding the IRS treats federal and state withholding from IRA distributions as if the taxes are paid equally throughout the year. Your understanding is correct, listener, except for the state part. Remember that. Even if I took the withholding on December 31st, so hypothetically, can I avoid making quarterly estimated payments throughout the year and avoid being subject to the tax underpayment penalty if every year on December 31st, I withdraw the taxes and request my custodian make the entire distribution payable to the IRS, or send it all to the IRS? I hear all my retired friends saying they are way too nervous about making correct quarterly payments. Thanks for all you do. You guys should consider charging for the show. Charging for the show? How the hell would we do that?
You can only listen with a subscription or something.
No, we're not going to do that.
Put the show behind a paywall.
The majority of do-it-yourselfers do not realize how valuable it is hearing your wisdom. Especially from Ed Slott for free. And then he did sign it, Tom Brady, but I know it's not the real Tom Brady.
Who knows?
If this is Tom Brady.
He's close to retirement, so.
It ain't Tom Brady.
No, it's not.
Okay, we'll call him George. George, you're on to something here.
Yes.
But I wouldn't do it on December 31st.
No, you're playing with fire there.
But everything you described would work because, I mean, listen to the previous answer. The IRS will consider money withheld from an IRA being received equally throughout the year.
The only thing I'll point out is make sure you take that distribution into account for the total taxes you owe, because technically you got into December and we discovered, say, to extend Jim's example, the $15,000 of taxes that you should have withheld, but you didn't. You're actually not going to be able to satisfy the taxes for that year with just the $15,000. You're also going to generate new taxes above and beyond that. Now, there shouldn't be a penalty because that'll have occurred in the fourth quarter at the end of the year and when you make that last quarterly payment. But if you're trying to avoid making these quarterly estimated payments and satisfy the whole year with this one withdrawal from the IRA that gets 100% withheld and sent to the IRS, make sure you consider the taxes on the distribution itself that will be owed.
Absolutely.
In addition to all the other income that you've had throughout the year. And so the point is, yes, you can do this. The thing that would then keep you from having to make these quarterly calculations that all of your friends seem to be bothered by, just make sure you do the calculation correctly.
The one thing I want to say, because he indicated he's not retired yet. Mm-hmm. When you retire, it's not as difficult as it sounds. And if your friends are making quarterly tax payments sound like this big, scary, evil ogre. Is it ogre or ogre?
Ogre.
Ogre. Then I think they're doing something wrong. Because you should have a fairly good estimate, maybe early in retirement, if you're getting some deferred compensation coming in, if you're getting some old payments, if you were self-employed coming in, if you might be getting some unique income things coming in, you're not really sure how much you're making, it can be a little difficult. But eventually, when you're on RMDs, pensions, Social Security, income annuities, dividends, you pretty much know every year what you're going to be making. And a good tax person, even TurboTax, for Pete's sakes, when I used to do my own taxes, I don't anymore, mine are way too complicated now. But they would produce quarterly coupons. It's not that hard. And I would mail literally the coupon in with a check. But also what you got to do is try to make your best guess estimate, send in the quarterly payments. But in December of every year, just do a preliminary tax return. or hire a firm to do it for you. Where they're going to, you got 11 months of income out of 12. You got 11 months. So figure out what it is I've made. What do I think I'm going to make in December? What, especially if you have a large brokerage account and you might be getting some big distributions, you can figure it out in December how much you're going to be getting in distributions, and maybe if you're going to be getting any type of additional income or bonuses or something, and see if you've made a mistake. Then, if you did make a mistake, was the mistake isolated and just a fourth quarter mistake? You got a big distribution taken in November that you didn't think you were going to get? Well, you don't need to spread taxes out. If the tax liability mistake was for income that came in the fourth quarter, now I wish Joe was here because maybe I'm wrong on that. Am I wrong on that, Chris? Or do they look at the income per quarter? Or do they consider your income earned throughout the year? I don't want to be giving bad info on that. Joe is here today. I'm going to try to run downstairs or ask her to come upstairs if you can send her a text to clarify that, because I don't want to be giving bad info on that.
Well, I'm right on the IRS site. One thing I want to mention to people, one way, and this is if your friends are having constipation over this whole quarterly thing, as long as...
I think it's consternation.
No, constipation. I mean, you get all bound up inside and you can't go to the bathroom.
Oh, all right.
Could be consternation, too. I intended to say constipation. the out on this penalty, though, is if you've withheld 100% of the tax owed last year, you're out. You're free and clear. Mm-hmm. There is no penalty. Or if you've withheld 90% of what you owe this year, so they give you that 10% little wiggle room. But if you're really worried about it, just make sure that you have sent in 100% of the taxes that were owed last year. And even if your income this current year was way, way higher, they're going to say, well, you owe the tax, but you don't owe the penalty because we're going to consider this a surprise because you at least withheld what you paid last year in taxes, and now you're free and clear. As far as coming in uneven, there's actually a comment on here. Generally, taxpayers should make estimated tax payments in four equal amounts to avoid a penalty. However, if you receive income unevenly during the year, you may be able to vary the amounts of the payments to avoid or lower the penalty by using the annualized installment method. And there's a form that you fill that out to see if you owe the tax. So if you have really chaotic earnings, my recommendation would be, if you're really that worried about this tax, this penalty, really, it's not the taxes, it's a penalty for not paying the taxes or having the estimated taxes sent in. Make sure you send in 100% of what you owed the previous year. The other thing is, now that here's an out, here's a workaround to this. If you get to November and December and realize that you screwed this up, you can make this big withholding from an IRA distribution and satisfy it that way as well. The IRS doesn't bother to mention that as a workaround to this issue. But as far as I knew there was this out, if you withheld a certain amount, they gave you forgiveness if it turned out, and it's 100% of last year's tax liability.
But so. And I had one of the interns go down and get Joe, so she'll come upstairs and we'll bring her on the podcast to clear up that little confusion that I have. But what I want to tell this listener, don't overcomplicate this. Yes, your strategy would work. Theoretically, it will work. My question is, why would you want to do it? And I don't know. You could do it the way that you are figuring, but if you do, don't take the money out on December 31st. I would do it probably mid-December just to be safe and make sure it gets there. Because remember, all these custodians are being hammered in December with last-minute tax issues or last-minute conversions or last-minute contributions. And they may not have time to do it right. So yes, it will work, but they may not have time to do it right. Joe is here. Joe, if you want to grab a mic. We got an easy question. It's not gonna scare you. She doesn't have headphones, though.
No, she can hear us, though. Just turn on the microphone and...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, cool. We got a quick question. When does the... For retirees. So if someone is retired and they receive a big distribution, say, in the fourth quarter, Will the IRS consider that just received in the fourth quarter so they can send in one fourth quarter estimated payment for that big distribution? Or is it going to be considered received throughout the year, and because they didn't pay anything in the first, second, or third quarter, they're going to get a penalty?
No, they won't have a penalty. When they get that distribution at the end of the year, they make their quarterly payment based off of that distribution. Because say things change during the year, you know, and so they can't anticipate maybe a big distribution that they're going to have in quarter one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when that distribution happens in quarter four, then
so they
make their payment.
So they will look at each quarter.
Yes.
Perfect. That's what we thought. I just wanted to make sure. And that we had been saying that.
Yeah.
But then I started second guessing myself.
Nope. It's good. And generally, I mean, not everybody, but most people know what their tax situation is going to be for the year. So they base their estimated tax payments for each quarter from the consistency of the year before. But in these situations where maybe they don't take out a distribution until the fourth quarter because of what you guys recommend, you know, waiting till the end to determine how much to take out, then, you know, they don't have to pay taxes for that amount until they decide to actually take it out and they know what the recognition of that income is.
Perfect. That's okay. What we wanted to make sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Perfect.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right. So we were right on that.
Glad we chose to do the show today when she was here.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Two down, four to go, hopefully.
That's not going to happen.
Okay. Hello, Jim and Chris. Greetings from Kentucky. I am a longtime Pats fan. Okay. It's really, and he gave his name, but we'll call him George. It's really George from Wisconsin, and I'm a Packers fan. But he was trying to get to the top of the hump there. Oh. It probably pains a Packers fan to give kudos to the
Packers. Oh, I'm sure. These people are sacrificing more than you could ever imagine.
Especially a Packers fan.
Oh, for sure.
Yes. Okay, I would like to thank you both for your very informative podcast, especially all of the wonderful knowledge provided by Jim. That's real. And he actually wrote, now you can show this to Chris to prove mm-hmm. it was in a real email.
I can tell by the tone of your voice when it's real or not. I wasn't doubting that one.
Oh, you knew? I don't know. How the hell you can tell the difference?
Because we've been talking to each other for a decade.
So you can tell when I'm making
read
something
you.
Up?
Yes. Totally.
Lying to you isn't going to work.
No.
All right. But anyway, so I think this guy was being very nice to me. That was nice.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm not sure why, but yeah.
My question is about early retirement. I have taken a great interest in your concept of a minimum dignity floor approach to retirement. Mm-hmm. Although in earlier episodes, both of you downplay early retirement. I seem to remember you guys saying it's too long to plan for and so much can change. Let me stop mm-hmm. him there. It's not that we downplay early retirement. What we downplay, if you are going to retire at 50, say, and that's to me pretty early, and you are 45 or even 40, doing a retirement analysis makes sense because you're 10 years from retirement. What Chris and I downplay is someone who's 45 and is going to retire at 65 and wants us to do a retirement analysis. I think that's what he's confusing, or do you disagree?
Either that, or I know we've had shows where we talked about all the extra complexities and challenges that face people who retire early. And maybe he interpreted that as we're not a fan of retiring early. It's not that we're a fan or not of retiring early, but when you retire early, it's
a lot harder
than you think because of things like covering medical expenses, for instance, right? You don't have an employer plan available to you anymore for the most part. If you're lucky, you've got some access to something, but you'll have a long period of time where you're not going to have access to the Medicare system, at least under current rules. Who knows what happens in the coming years, but things like that people seem to underestimate the cost of things in their 50s and early 60s. And so I think we've had talks about that, but it could be either. So I'm not quite sure which show he might be referring to. But just to clarify, I'd love to retire tomorrow. I'm not you know, I'm not anti-retire early at all, but it is a very much a challenge, and you are going to have a very extended distribution period, which is, in my estimation, in my argument, I would say it leads to more of a reason to take a minimum dignity floor approach with secure income in that case because of the level of uncertainty.
Let's get into the nitty-gritty of his question then. Because, again, I agree with Chris. We are not anti-retire early. But retiring early is a lot more complicated than many people think. That's all we wanted to say. Okay, my wife and I would like to retire in 2 years. She will be 55, I will be 49. We currently have saved so that our withdrawal rate will probably need to be around 3.5% to meet our projected minimum dignity floor and our projected discretionary expenses. So I want to pause there. Mm-hmm. That's a very low withdrawal rate. So either listener, you guys have saved a hell of a lot of money, and if that's the case, congratulations. Or your numbers might be a little light.
Well, I was going to say, for people 50, that is a fairly high number. Because, you know, the old 4% rule that was touted wasn't for a 50-year-old. That didn't work until you had a much shorter lifespan. Or retirement.
It's just that most of the time we see minimum dignity floors around $50,000 to $60,000 a year, plus fund spending. I'm assuming if you're going to be 49 and your wife is 55, you're going to want to do a lot of fun stuff. I don't know. Maybe that. I'm just saying your numbers seem a little light to me, but they could have amassed quite a bit of assets. Maybe. And in truth, it is just a 3.5 or even a 4% withdrawal is all you need for both your minimum dignity floor and your fund expenses. And for those who don't know minimum dignity floor, we'll get into it in greater detail on another show, but it's essentially five categories of expenses: food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare. Five categories of expenses that will continue for as long as you live, whether you have money or not. And that is key with the minimum dignity floor. It's not like a fun expense that if you ran out of money, all the fun expense stops. You don't have to buy a new shirt or go out to dinner or go fishing like I do or hunting. But you have to be able to cover your food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare. We'll get into minimum dignity for a lot deeper than that.
I agree with you that it seems low because we wouldn't expect a lot of 50 to 55-year-olds to have amassed enough for that to cover both. My comment about it being kind of high on a projected survivability of the portfolio aspect. That was more where I was coming from.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the clarity on that, because some people would have got confused on what you meant there. So that's all I'm saying, listener. Your number seems a little light. Just make sure they're accurate. But then he goes on, Chris, and he says, does the minimum dignity floor work for an early retiree? Do you still feel that retiring too early is a risk? And yes, we've already addressed, we feel it is. Maybe we'll do an EDU show on the risks of retiring early or something like that. That might be a good one. Do you guys think it would be a bad idea or should I avoid it? I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts on early retiring. What I wanted to get to, he's not really asking a question, it's more of an opinion. I'm not going to try to talk you out of retiring, listener. If you and your wife truly feel your numbers are accurate, that would be my only thing. A lot of times people say to us, listeners, one of the things they got out of our whole process was the amount of data we gather and the amount of things we look at that they weren't thinking of. So I don't know what this listener has thought of, how he has designed his minimum dignity floor and his fund spending and how he came up with that he was only going to need 3.5% of his portfolio. Now, again, he could have amassed $5 million and no problem. He's going to live within that. And he lives very modestly. I don't know. But I know at 49 and 55, they're most likely going to want to go do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And consume a lot of fun money. So I'm not going to pass judgment, listener. You've got to see if you feel your numbers are accurate. What I do want to talk about is our concept of the minimum dignity floor and does it help early retirees? Minimum dignity floor, and please chime in, Chris, anytime you want, because you do all the planning in the office. Minimum dignity floor is more of, we call bucketing visualized asset allocation. Well, I am going to call our approach to minimum dignity floor and fund spending visualized asset consumption. We're visualizing the consumption you're going to do and categorizing them into those expenses that have to be covered forever for as long as you live, and those expenses that don't have to be covered forever, the fun expenses, but tend to be far higher early in retirement when you still have the health, inclination, and desire to do fun things. So that's the concept Chris and I have with fund number and minimum dignity floor. We believe the minimum dignity floor should be covered with lifetime guaranteed secure income. And here is where early retirees can't do it. Lifetime guaranteed secure income, for I don't want to get too deep into this. It's essentially Social Security, pension, and income annuities. We have a whole disciplined approach to how we came up with that. We'll talk about it on another show. We feel because these are expenses, listener, that are going to continue forever, they should be covered with income that continues forever. Because if you run out of money, food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses continue to pile up. So we want it to be covered with income that lasts forever. So in case you did run out of money, you still have the income for your minimum dignity floor.
With that being said, most of our clients have a period where their income, their Social Security, pensions, and income annuities haven't fully engaged or kicked in. For a lot of people, that doesn't happen until age 70. So they will have what we call a delay period, the period funding your minimum dignity floor that is required out of your assets, so not out of secure income, but out of your assets in order to bridge the gap from retirement to the full engagement of your secure income, which if you followed our approach, once that secure income is fully engaged, full throttle forward, it's covering your minimum dignity floor at that point. And it's in the point of most concern during the period of most concern, which is the indeterminate period, the unknown length of time between 70 and death. See, that's a very unique period. We don't know how long it's going to last. That's why having income covering that rather than assets is most...
Income that lasts forever.
Right, that is most reassuring to people. In the period before that, it's different because it's a fixed period. When you have assets that you're going to deploy to cover something, whether it's minimum dignity floor or something else, when you know when it ends, that makes the math so much easier, much more straightforward. Now, for these people, they just have a much longer delay period than normal.
And that's what I wanted to get to. And herein lies the problem, listener. I don't recommend, first of all, for someone who's going to be 49 and 55, your wife will be 55, you'll be 49, to take out an income annuity during that initial shortage period. I'm assuming when your Social Security and hopefully pension turn on later, you'll cover most, if not all, of your minimum dignity floor. But from 55 of your wife, 49 of you, until age 70, and it's usually 70 because that's when Social Security, pension, and income annuities usually turn on. During that period, I don't want you buying an income annuity. It's going to cost you an arm and a leg. You're still too young. So you're going to have to cover that period with distributions.
Right.
Now, as Chris pointed out, because you know the end date, age 70, you know the beginning date, it'll be retirement, you'll be 49, your wife will be 55, you can use your Excel spreadsheet or a calculator or the results of retirement analysis if you worked with planning firms like we are. You can use that data, Chris, to come up with the amount of money you're going to need.
Right, the amount you need, and we encourage you to still categorize it as minimum dignity floor versus fund stuff. And so you need to reserve that in some way or treat that in some way that is going to make you reassured that you can bridge the gap between retirement and the full engagement of your secure income to cover your minimum dignity floor. Because it's only after you've done that that you start to see what's available for the fun stuff.
Exactly.
And for a lot of people retiring early, their minimum dignity floor might look pretty robust in coverage. But once we show them how much they're really going to need for the next 20 years, from 49 to 70 for this particular person, and they might find that it is going to take a lot of those resources that they've built up, those assets they've amassed, and they look at it and say, you know, there's not nearly enough money left for us to have any kind of fun over the next 20, 25, 30 years during our young years. We just totally didn't anticipate how much we'd have to set aside for minimum dignity floor prior to secure income being fully engaged.
And just remember, listener, whether you are an early retiree in your early 50s, as you'll be turning 50 and your wife will be in her mid-50s at 55, or if you are a 65, 70-year-old, just remember your minimum dignity floor items will continue forever. You have no leeway in them. You can't cut them. You always have to pay for food, utilities, transportation, housing, and health care. Now, yes, you can massage them. You can't cut them. You don't have to replace your car. You can buy used clothes. You can buy cheaper food. I get that. You can lower your minimum dignity floor in an emergency. You can sacrifice. You can give up eating certain things you might like. I love pistachios. I could give those up because they're an expensive nut if I had to. And I can go to a cheaper peanut. So I get that. I know there's things I can do to massage my minimum dignity floor, but for the most part, I got to cover 100% of it. So you need to first determine what that's going to be for 20 years. Keep them separate, like Chris says. And that minimum dignity floor, get the net present value of it. Because it's going to be with a series of cash flows. There's websites that'll do this for you if you can't do it on your own. And you can take all those cash flows, adjust them for inflation, and get how much money you would need today growing at whatever expected rate of return you're going to have. And get an idea of how much money needs to be reserved for your minimum dignity floor. But break it into those two phases, the delay phase, and we mean delay from the sense you're delaying Social Security, pension, income annuities, and the post-age 70 phase. The hottest one to fund is the post-listener. It's not the first one. The first one's easy. According to you, you got the money. So you just got to figure out how much is minimum dignity floor, and make sure that is sequestered away. It's off limits. If it comes to 1.8 million, I'm just making it up. If it comes to 1.8 million, you need to make sure you have growing at a certain rate of return to fully fund that minimum dignity floor. You're going to move 1.8 million from your account, not literally, but mentally. Let's just say you had 4.8 million total to make the math work. You're now moving 1.8 million off to the side. You actually have 3 million to play with now, Chris, as he looks at other things. Mm-hmm. Don't overlook aging. That's all I'm going to say on it. Growing old. What are you going to do for growing old? What are you going to do for health care? How are you going to pay for it? It's going to get expensive every year in retirement. Make sure you're adjusting for a lot of that as well. Anyways, I just wanted to point out to them the minimum dignity floor concept still works. We do not feel anyone, and if we were insurance agents, we would feel differently. So if you work with an insurance agent, he or she may say Chris and I are fools, but we don't feel we are fools. We don't believe you should buy a period certain annuity. In other words, you know you got 20 years from retirement until 70. You could theoretically buy an income annuity that will generate a certain amount of income every year guaranteed for 20 years. I wouldn't recommend it. You have the end date. What makes this so difficult is the second phase. We don't know the end date. Could be one day, could be 25 or 30 years. But when you know the end date, Chris, figuring out how much money to reserve, put off to the side, manage a little bit more conservatively, and start withdrawing and bucketing it and positioning it for spending. It's not that hard.
No.
Because he has the end date.
Right.
Don't go buy an income annuity during the delay phase at your age. Now, post age 70, if there's an income shortage, Chris and I are huge proponents of covering that with guaranteed income. Yeah. All right. Interesting question, I thought.
Nice. So if you want to do that other show, we probably need to cut it off now, even though we only did three questions, which seems to be our norm. But we did take 10 minutes talking about falling off a roof.
I didn't fall.
Or not falling. Almost falling.
I almost fell.
Almost sliding to your death.
Let me get to this one real quick because we can easily answer this one fast. Okay. And it has to do with our 60-day rollover show.
Okay.
Good day.
By the way, that new Roth conversion episode itself, I did find that. It is called New Roth Conversion Strategy. It's the EDU show number 1940, which for those of you who haven't figured out the coding, 19 is the year, so 2019, episode 40. November 6th of 2019 is when that happened. So if you want the details on this strategy that they're talking about in this email, that's the show.
So he just wants some clarification. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure I do this correctly. I'm planning to take a distribution of around $170,000.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to withhold 10% federal and 10% California taxes. So I will net $135,000. Out of this, I'm going to keep $85,000 for my living expenses next year. But I would like to put the remaining $50,000 in a Roth IRA as a conversion. So, after I get my check of $135,000, do I just write a personal check for $50,000 and deposit it into my Roth IRA? Or do I need to do anything else?
He nailed it on the head. That's how you get the money. And when it's, 'cause when you're doing a 60-day rollover, or let me say a conversion as a 60-day rollover, and he's kind of blending it with keeping some of the money, but he's going to take that money out and then ultimately roll it over as a Roth conversion into his Roth IRA, it's sitting in your own personal checking account. You can write a check to whoever you want. The IRS, unless you do something else, is going to assume you're just going to keep it. On the other hand, you can, within the 60-day window, roll it over into an IRA. In this case, if you roll it into the Roth, it's now going to be in there after tax. If he decided to roll it into the traditional, he could unwind some of the taxes owed, but that's not his intent. Here he's asking to get the 50 that I want it to go in my Roth. Do I just write a check and put it in there? Yes, that's exactly how you do it. Just make sure it happens within the 60-day window.
And make sure you haven't done one over the last 365 days, just to be on the safe side. You got to make sure on that. The tax implication is the entire 170 is taxable.
Right.
The money that was sent to the IRS in the state of California as tax withholding, that is taxable to you. The $85,000 that you're going to reserve to spend next year, that is taxable to you. And the $50,000 going into a Roth will also be taxable to you. So the full 170 is taxable. It's just going in three different pools.
Right.
And finally, it doesn't have to be $50,000 from the 135, like you said, that you were going to send $50,000 from the 135. Now, I'm guessing you're sending it because not too many people have $50,000 lying around in the bank. But money is fungible. The money that actually gets put into the Roth as the actual conversion, it could come from a separate account.
Yeah, could have come from anywhere.
Anyway,
just happens, has to be your money.
Could be money you just inherited.
Yeah. Yep.
Could be money your neighbor decide to pay for you because you helped him off the roof when he made a stupid mistake and went up on a snowy day and got stuck on the roof. So the $50,000 can come from anywhere, not just that check. But yes, you have the basics down quite well. I think he understood it quite well.
Perfect.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening, as we always are thankful in this season of thankfulness. We just missed Thanksgiving here. For us, it was just last week. I know these shows post up a little bit later, so it'll have been longer than that when you're listening to this, but we're recording it the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. We want to remind everybody that we are practicing financial planners specializing in retirement planning here in Northern Colorado. Although we help clients throughout the entire country, we can interact with you quite well. We've had a lot of practice over the phone, over the internet, screen sharing. Some people actually fly out and visit our office, which is always fun because we don't get to see everybody face-to-face all the time. But we can help you throughout the country. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more about what we can do for you in the retirement planning space, we encourage you to schedule what's called a coffee and a second opinion, where we will give you an hour or so of time and chat with you about our process and our approach. And you can ask any questions that you want. You can describe your questions, concerns. And if it seems like a good fit after that, we can move forward. If you're looking for something that we don't supply, we'd be happy to help you find a resource for your particular questions. But that's how to engage with us. And you can do that through the website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. You can get there through chrishelps.com as well, but Jim Helps is fewer characters to type. I have to admit that because it's true. Again, thanks for everybody listening, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.